Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor, every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. Though the weeks are becoming few and far between with Taylor Strano leaving RTRFM to go to Sydney and enjoy a new stage of her career, but so this will be, you know, I think it's the second last, or where are we at?
So there'll be two more episodes with Taylor, and then there'll be a special farewell show for Taylor on Friday the 30th of June, which we'll be in attendance for.
Yeah.
We won't be reviewing movies per se, but it'll be fun to share in that with her. And then Movie Squad will return in the second half of 2023 with a new breakfast host, which is very exciting. I mean, sad, bittersweet. Mm. But Tristan, look, this isn't our first rodeo. We've buried plenty of breakfast hosts before Taylor.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, it's always been a pleasure. And, yeah, it's congratulations to Taylor. And it's we're going to miss her. But there'll be the final episode for that. But just wanted to make a note at the start that, you know, part of the Movie Squad team, Taylor Strano, will be leaving. So we wish her all the best. And hopefully, you know, with more Tom Holland Spider-Man movies on the way, we can check in at some point and see, you know, what the vibe check is.
I think, there'll need to be a special correspondence when Spider-Man 4 something home comes out.
Home away from home, maybe.
We should actually one day try and predict that. I reckon you could get it pretty close.
Yes, but that's a movie in the future. We're talking about movies right now, and we're looking at two very interesting but different movies, both by female directors, both focused on female characters in the lead. We are looking at an HBO film, basically something that Americans are seeing on cable, but that will be released in cinemas here, but a very interesting film called Reality.
Reality, that's right. It's out on the 28th of June. We're getting in early to take a look at this film starring Sydney Sweeney as reality winner, a real person, a real name, and an incredible true story. But an interesting way that they've told it. Tristan, though, first, really excited to hear your review of Nicole Holofcener's new film, You Hurt My Feelings.
You Hurt My Feelings, a new comedy drama set in New York about neurotic people, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies. I was really looking forward to this one because even though I haven't seen all of Nicole Holofcener's films, including I've always wanted to see her first film, Walking and Talking. I haven't seen Friends with Money. I haven't seen Please Give. But I have seen Enough Said and Lovely and Amazing. And Enough Said, in particularly, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini, was such a great pairing and such a great film. So this is Julia Louis-Dreyfus with Tobias Menzies in the new Nicole Holofcener film, You Hurt My Feelings.
Happy anniversary.
We're so lucky.
Yeah.
So, Elliot tells me you're a writer.
Your last one, it should have done better.
There's lots of new voices. Refugees, cancer, murder, abuse.
I'm an old voice.
You're the best voice.
Maybe if Dad hadn't just been verbally abusive, it would have been a bestseller.
Don't say that.
Your memoir is great. Your new book is great.
It is 7:30. It is time to check in with the squad. It is, of course, Movie Squad time. It is time to check in. Like I said, I'm losing my words because
seamless improvisation here.
You know when you're getting to the end of something and you just forget all the words that you need to use. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Taylor.
Tristan, how you doing?
Good morning. Yes.
Yeah. Look, we're here to check in, and and check in is what we'll be doing.
Yeah. Check in. Are you okay, Taylor? You can't seem to string a sentence together. This is a sad but exciting occasion. It's the second to last Movie Squad officially with me. I mean, Movie Squad will continue forever. But thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's, you know, it's sad news, but it's also exciting news for you. But it's always been fun to talk movies with you each and every Friday morning. And, yeah, we'll have to make these last week's count and really, you know, I mean, you don't have too much else going on. Can you see a lot of movies in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, good one. Nah, I don't reckon. I mean, when have I done that before? Let's be real.
Well, I will say that Tristan and I, we did, once we knew that you were moving on, we said we got to look at the next few weeks. We've got to move some things around, prioritize. So rest assured, we will be reviewing Extraction 2 next week.
I was going to say, it's been a while since we've had an absolutely savage movie review. So if we could squeeze one in.
I'm looking forward to Extraction 2.
All right, let's get down to business and start with our first film, Tristan, You Hurt My Feelings.
You Hurt My Feelings. What a title. This is a new comedy drama that's out in cinemas this week, and it stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus, best known from Veep and Seinfeld, and it's a reunion with director Nicole Huffman-Senna. They worked together on the 2013 film Enough Said, which starred Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini, which was, you know, sadly released after, I think, 1 year after his death. But I really loved that film. And, this is... Well, firstly, let's start with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, because I was just thinking, I'm sure it's something that she's had to answer to, this kind of like weird idea of the Seinfeld curse, that after Seinfeld, none of these like actors who were in the cast would be, you know, as successful. But it seems like out of all of them, she's done the most great work after Seinfeld, including Veep, and including her new role in all those Marvel movies as well. But, you know, Taylor, are you a fan of Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
Hell yeah, I'm a fan. I love Veep. I think Veep's one of the best shows that was made. She was also in that film recently, You People, where she played a bloody awful mother. I think she's great. She's wonderful. What about you, Simon?
Look, she's one of the great comedians of all time and comic actors. And Elaine Bennis is one of the iconic characters, of course. But I will say that, you know, and Veep obviously is brilliant, but Enough Said... when that came out in 2013, and I think it was important to note that Julia Louis-Dreyfus hadn't been in a lot of films. Mm. She'd stayed largely in TV, excluding, of course, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
yes.
But Enough Said is so good, and she's so good in it. I remember noting that that being my favourite performance of that year. She has such breadth and depth to her, outside of Elaine Bennis and Selena Meyer, that it's really exciting to know she's reteamed with Nicole Holofcener for a new film.
And what about Nicole Holofcener? Because actually, she's made quite a few films, but I was sadly thinking, I've actually only seen like one or two. Like, I've seen Enough Said and Lovely and Amazing. I've always wanted to see the first film that she made, which came out in the 90s, indie movie boom, Walking and Talking, which had Catherine Keener and Anne Hesch and Liev Schreiber. And Catherine Keener is an actor that she's worked with in a lot of other films. Are you a fan of her films?
I've always wanted to see those first two as well. I've seen Please Give, which she made I can't even remember the lead actor in that film. I think it was Catherine Keener. But that was really good. So, but they're kind of talky, urbane movies, you know? They are like, what we would have described 10 years ago as being of the Woody Allen ilk, but not as acerbic as those films, but very interesting, smart, witty films.
Yeah, and it feels like a type of film that we don't see as often, maybe as we used to, particularly in like art house or independent cinemas. And it might be only like Noah Baumbach who's making this type of film. But yeah, it is set in New York. It does focus on these kind of self-absorbed, neurotic people in that kind of Woody Allen mode. But the main character here is Beth, a novelist living in New York, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She lives with her therapist husband, Don, played by Tobias Menzies, a British actor that people might know from Outlander, Game of Thrones, Season 1 of The Terror. Definitely see that if you haven't. So Beth is a novelist. She teaches a writing class. She's kind of dealing with the middling response to her memoirs that were published, and that didn't do as well as she hoped. And she's trying to work on a new novel that is not a memoir, that is a narrative like thriller, but is kind of, you know, just a bit unsure about it. You know, trying to finish it, trying to kind of get it published. Meanwhile, her husband, Don, he is sitting during his therapy sessions with patients and is, visibly kind of like seems a bit like out of it. He confuses details of patients and it doesn't really offer much to them, including a lovely supporting role from David Cross and his wife, Amber Tamblyn, as a couple who are continually arguing with each other, much to his dislike. Complete silence. They also have a son, a grown son, Elliot, played by Owen Teague, who works in a legal weed shop and is trying to work on a play. And there's also Beth's sister, Sarah, played by Michaela Watkins, who's an interior decorator, struggling with indecisive clients and lives with her boyfriend, Mark, played by Arian Moyad, best known as Stewie from Succession. So we get to see him do something a little bit different. But I do think he wears a turtleneck in one or two scenes. So he's keeping the Stewie vibe going.
Good.
Thank goodness.
Yes. I also want to note, Michaela Watkins is perfect sister casting for Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes, she, I can't even think of a particular film or show that she's...
Saturday Night Live, trophy wife, casual.
Yeah, but she is like... a great, recognizable character actor, and as you say, perfectly cast as Julie Louis-Dreyfus's sister, because there's a lot of great scenes where it's just them, like, you know, hashing it out and talking. Because the main premise for this film, The Catalyst, is a really simple idea, which is that Beth is hanging out with her sister. They decide to surprise their respective partners, Don and Mark, who are shopping for socks. And they sneak up behind them. And then Beth, Julie Louis-Dreyfus' character, overhears her husband being very critical and negative about the novel that she's working on. He doesn't know that she's there. But like all throughout the process of working on this novel, he's just been very supportive, given like very positive feedback. And this is kind of like a moment of, you know, seeing the real side of your partner, or seeing what they really think of what you do. And for some people, I'm sure this is like, oh, that's small potatoes. That doesn't mean much of anything. That's not the real stuff of life. But she takes it very hard and leaves without letting them know that she was listening. And the movie kind of deals with the fallout of, you know, that kind of insight into what your partner actually thinks of what you do. And, you know, the difference between being like, you know, positively supportive or insincere in terms of your supportive, or being kind of like direct and harsh in terms of feedback. And it has to do, I guess, with, you know, not simply just making something creatively, but also just like how you relate to people. There's a lot of kind of variations of this throughout the film and the supporting characters, including the way that she has raised her son in terms of being, you know, super, super supportive, super positive, but the unintended negative consequences of that. So this is, you know, I really like this film. I was laughing continuously all the way through it. I really responded to the neuroticism and the kind of self-absorption. I'm sure that, and I think, you know, the director is aware of this, like, you know, she's been charged along her career with a lot of the films that she makes, that they're about kind of very comfortable people, like upper middle class, who shouldn't want for nothing. But I think they kind of make the point that even in your world, you know, these small things do take up your emotional life and your thoughts. So I really liked You Hurt My Feelings. Now, Simon, I know you haven't seen this, but are you a fan of this type of movie, of kind of characters who are a little bit sort of, you know, not focusing on the bigger picture, focusing more on themselves?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things. Firstly, yes, yeah. I'm very excited to see it. I really, everything you're describing sounds perfect. Like, I love that concept. And I think there's two things. One is that, you know, we've seen a lot of movies, sometimes by these New York filmmakers, or, you know, these sort of upper middle class or just straight up upper class, you know, concerns. And that can be frustrating when they're so insular. But I feel like there's a kernel of truth here. Sure, not everyone is going to be a wealthy memoirist or a, you know, living in the Upper East Side or whatever it might be. But the idea of, you know, what does my partner really think of me or of what I do?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what are they like when I'm not around? And these kernels of truth, and a film about that, something so, you know, something so specific, is what is generally appealing. You know, that is, like, the more specific you get, the more mainstream and accessible the idea is. So I think you could apply that to any relationship, and I think it would be so wonderful to see it excavated by Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies. So I'm really excited. Tobias Menzies also known for a lot of drama, but is a very dry comic talent. And I think about his role in Catastrophe, Sharon Horgan show. He plays the doctor in that. Yeah, so I'm really excited. Taylor, what about you? Because I don't know if you've seen any of Nicole Holofcener's other films, but does this feel like the potatoes are just too small here?
No, this feels great. I think that it's ridiculous to like have a full-on world meltdown over something as silly as this, which is why it makes it such enjoyable watching. Mm. It's like that center of the universe, but the center of the universe is like really kind of petty.
Yeah.
And that is delightful. Simon, you are currently writing a book. this I'm assuming and I'm hoping hasn't happened to
no,
you.
No, it hasn't happened. And thankfully the book is written. I wouldn't be dissuaded at this point if I had any feedback. But I think, you know, look, we all have creative endeavors. They're all things that we do that we're passionate about, whether it is our work or whether it is our extracurricular stuff. And we all want to be supportive partners as well. But it is so interesting, you know, and one of the things that I joke about with my wife is I've dedicated the book to her and my son. But the subject matter of the book is very upsetting. It's a book about horrible things. So it's sort of a weird tribute. But yeah, I think, regardless of whether you, like, I don't think the audience interest in here needs to be made up of novelists.
No, and that's the thing, like, that's the starting point, but there's a lot of kind of different versions of this, and it has to do with, you know, maybe a general feeling, but also, like, the characters being in middle age of kind of being a bit, like, sort of, you know, out of step or just kind of like wondering if what they're doing is the right thing. And sometimes it's more like even not simply between partners or family members, but also people, you know, like Michaela Watkins' character is in that position where she is an interior decorator, and there's a running thing of her like presenting a new lamp to a client who's continually saying, no, that's not quite right. And just like what she says to the client, but like what she says to her sister, and just kind of like the way that makes her feel, and just feeling like, what am I doing with my life? So there's a lot that I think that people can pick up on, even if they're not necessarily a novelist living in New York. But yeah, all the performances are really good, particularly, yeah, Tobias Menzies, who this is a little bit different to what I'm usually used to seeing him in, but I think he does a good job in terms of a, you know, a good New York accent and a sense of like...
Oh, he's playing a New Yorker in this.
Yeah, he's not British.
I assumed he would be British.
But I mean, he's like pretty like, you know, middle class New York. He's not doing a Brooklyn old school accent or anything like that. But he's got a face for it in terms of that's a like a running thing as well, that people are always saying, you look really tired and sleepy, and he's just got those magnificent bags and chiseled lines in his face. But yeah, You Hurt My Feelings is out in cinemas now, and definitely if you're a fan of Julia Louis-Dreyfus and comedy dramas, I would say check it out.
If you've seen it, let us know. 0405 921 921. It is Movie Squad. We're back for part two in just a moment.
This is my partner. What partner? Wally Taylor.
Hey, how are you?
We have a search warrant for your house.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Would you like to see it?
Yes, please. 125 pounds, you guys. Flatter me. Sorry, I have a sense of humor.
I was on your driver's license.
That's right.
Okay, well, I lied.
Don't we all?
Got 10 minutes left of this hour. It is Movie Squad with Tristan and Simon again this week. And Simon, we're going to jump the gun slightly on this next film review.
Yes, well, like I said, we had to reconfigure some things with you exiting the building. No, that's fine, of course. But we wanted to make sure that we covered a film called Reality, or as Jenna Maroney from 30 Rock would call it, La Realité.
Yeah.
This is a new film that was actually a HBO movie in the US. So it's a TV movie in America. It's going to be eligible for Emmys in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure it'll be nominated for a few of them. But it's getting a theatrical release here on the 28th of June. And, you know, that happens semi-often. We had Bad Education a few years ago with Hugh Jackman. And it's interesting because you watch it in our context as a theatrical release or in cinemas, and certainly in these two examples, they are great. they feel theatrical. They are movies, and in both cases, they were acquired by HBO. So in the same way that a major studio might acquire a small independent film and then release it in cinemas, in America, a TV station, a cable station, captured them. But it doesn't feel like a TV movie the way we know of TV movies from back in the day. But it stars Sydney Sweeney as the improbably named reality winner. I should say Sydney Sweeney, Taylor, I assume you're familiar with her from Euphoria. She plays Cassie, the sort of lovesick teenager who kind of turned slightly deranged in the most recent season, and was also in The White Lotus, the first season of The White Lotus, as one of the two terrifying teenagers, and was nominated for Emmys for both of those performances, and I expect her to be nominated again here. Are you both fans of Sydney Sweeney?
Yeah, I mean, she's great. I look forward to seeing more from her. I have, like, really no feelings about it.
Yeah, that's more neutral than I anticipated, but that's fine. Interesting. What about yourself?
Well, I haven't... I know more about her as just this, like, upcoming star than I've seen. I mean, I haven't watched Euphoria, but I've seen the first season of White Lotus, and she's been in other things in small roles. I think even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But it does seem like she's on the rise, and it's a matter of time in terms of the film's kind of serving or meeting that. I mean, I think she was attached to a remake of Barbarella that's in production. But this sounds, this is a very interesting role for her, I think, in that it's kind of going against maybe the glamorous sort of kind of persona that she's more known for. This is a bit more like, and it's more of a kind of, this is like a real-time experience. I mean, it's a very interesting movie in what it's based on.
That's right. Yeah. It's based on a play by Tina Satter, who has also directed the film, which is great. The play was called Is This a Room? And I kind of prefer that title, firstly because you can Google it and actually find what it is. Trying to Google reality movie is very difficult, should you need to do that, if you want to find session times, for example. But it is the play and the movie is based on an actual transcript of an interview between FBI agents and reality winner in 2017. And when I say it's based on a transcript, I mean it is the transcript. And I remember when the play hit Broadway or off-Broadway a couple of years ago, just out of curiosity, I read the transcript. And the film mirrors that down to the stutters, down to the coughs, to the sneezes, to the half-words, even to the bits that are redacted. And what's interesting about the film is, and you know, I'll talk a bit more about the context, but as it gets to the meat of what this interview/interrogation is about, the transcript, because it's a, you know, government document or an FBI document, it's got big black lines over the text, and sometimes we see that brought to the screen. And when it comes to a redacted moment, the characters disappear from the screen. And so you spend much of the film, unless you're aware of the context going in, not knowing what they're actually interviewing reality about. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. It does begin with Sydney Sweeney as reality returning home one day. She pulls up to her house, her modest home in Georgia, and there's two plain-clothed gentlemen waiting for her. They're played by Josh Hamilton and Marchant Davis. And Josh Hamilton I know best as the dad from Eighth Grade, a really beautiful and warm performance. And they seem like, you know, dads. They're in polo shirts. They're kind of just low-key guys with, you know, normal, boring haircuts. But they flash their FBI badge, and they ask reality, you know, to step out of the car. And they spend much of the first act of the film trying to evaluate, hey, is there anyone else in the house before we go in there? Do you have any pets, a dog, a cat? How do we leash them? How do we keep them safe? How do we keep them fed? Meanwhile, more FBI agents emerge. They're all male. They all descend on the house, start searching it. She's still on the front lawn. They're asking her, are there any weapons in the house? Okay, how many? Where are they? And it's just going through the administration of a potential interview. But all the while, they're kind of, you know, having a fairly casual conversation until eventually we get into the house and we go into the back room, hence the title of the play, Is This a Room? Because it's sort of a strange little granny flat / you know, add-on. And the interrogation begins. But it shifts so seamlessly from casual conversation to casual interrogation that it's an interesting insight into the process of how the FBI kind of drills down on people they suspect of having committed a crime against the country. Now, I think, Tristan, it might be more fun to leave the details of Reality Winner's case out because I watched this with my wife and she wasn't aware of what Reality Winner was being interrogated about. But I will say she did work for the NSA, and so there's questions about, you know, a leaked document. But I thought it was so fascinating to kind of watch the game above the game, you know, to take the context out of it. And really, Reality, the movie, becomes this very interesting theatrical exercise that's not about the what or even the why someone would or wouldn't do what Reality is accused of, but who does these things? You know, who is the kind of person that could be accused of or be a whistleblower? And who are the kinds of people that are asked by the FBI to conduct these interviews? And I think the context is not lost of having, you know, a 25-year-old woman in a space, her house, surrounded now by 10 pretty gruff men and these two very nice interviewers. Tristan, you've seen the film. What did you think of Reality?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I didn't know much about this case or situation. And I think I did know a bit of read up on it before I watched it. So it's an interesting kind of experience. And you can see how the transcript would make for a play or even a film because it has that table setting at the start and then it gets really into this kind of interrogation. So you do feel that sense of that you're in that room, that you just have that sense of tension and pressure and the kind of the weird seesaw between them being very casual and just like asking about the dog and being kind of very sort of like affable. Particularly, I think Josh Hamilton is really great at kind of, you know, playing this sort of, not even good cop, bad cop, but just very like, you know, just sort of waspy, like, you know, nice guy. But underneath it all is basically just like, you know, pulling this person apart to get to the truth of things. And, you know, it's, I think all the performance is really good and it's so interesting as well because I think a lot of what it's kind of dealing with, the themes of it are still resounding and not just in America, but in terms of like how authorities treat whistleblowers, how the authorities just treat people. And that weird sense of the kind of the FBI kind of being both displaying their power and their authority while trying to be very like, you know, like, oh, you know,
we're on your side.
Yeah, we're trying to help you, and you just like it was such an intense and interesting experience. But I don't know, Taylor, does this sound like and it's also quite a short movie. It's only like 80 minutes.
Perfect. I was hooked already before you said that. Yeah, this definitely is interesting to me, given the context around sort of what it's based on and what this person is accused of. Which I've gathered only from the short sort of bio that you've provided me this morning. I mean, this is really interesting. I'm really interested to see Sydney Sweeney in this role as well.
And I think she's a really good actor, and I think she's probably been underserved by certainly Euphoria, which is just problematic across the board. I do enjoy the show generally, but, you know, her character, there's a lot of criticism around that, but her performance was always really good. She's great in The White Lotus, and here, playing this character, this young woman who is very capable. She works for the NSA, you know, and as a translator, but she is sort of lost in the weeds a little bit here. But watching her trying to process and also, you know, play the game back, I think is very interesting, watching her in this cat and mouse movie. And Tina Satter as the director, you know, a playwright and a theatre maker, but again, having total control of the tone and the sort of intensity of what would otherwise could have been a very boring movie. And part of it is the banality of the interrogation and how that's brought to life here. So I think this is better than like an exercise. I think it is actually quite a thrilling and interesting and compelling film, which I think is the most important thing. And yeah, it's the kind of thing where I'm glad it's going to be in cinemas in Australia. I think it's a great way to experience this sort of black box kind of concept of a movie.
Not for a few more weeks, though.
Yeah, so the 28th of June, there might be sneak previews, so keep an eye on it. But, you know, it's a small movie. There's lots of big movies coming out. It's good to, like, we're trying to build a bit of buzz here, Tristan. Get the buzz in early.
2 days before Barbie and Oppenheimer, it's okay.
Mm. Is that the week of Barbie and Oppenheimer?
June 22. Sorry, I thought you said June 28.
Because I remember, feeling sad that you weren't going to be here to cover those films with us.
I know. Can we get like a quick sneak preview of it maybe? We'll have to wait and see.
Sorry, that's your successor's privilege. You don't get that privilege, do
you? All right. That is Movie Squad for this week. Tristan, thank you.
Thank you.
Simon, we'll catch up again next Friday.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. A great discussion about two really interesting films. One that's more, I think, funny and warm in its own, self-absorbed way. But definitely reality. It itches a scratch. There's always a complaint about films based on plays that it's, but actually quite like a lot of films based on plays. I do like the theatricality of it, and sometimes as well the kind of the locked off nature, whether it's like set during one night or it's set during, you know, a 90 minutes, that feeling that you're in the room. So I do appreciate when films are stagey, and this is stagey, but it's also quite, I think it uses the format in terms of the way that the space and the characters work within the space, and even the way that the back room that you talk about, how it's of the house, it's an ordinary place, but it feels very invested and weighted with kind of just you feel like it's a prison as well.
Yeah, I think films based on plays, when done right, they kind of give you permission, or they give the filmmaker permission to do something you probably couldn't get away with otherwise.
Yeah.
And, you know, Glengarry Glen Ross is an example that comes to mind just because it's an easy one. You know, it's set over one night and it's a few characters. And then I think of something like Carnage, you know, Roman Polanski did God of Carnage. And that one didn't work as well. And I think part of the joke of the movie, but also what makes it fail as a movie, is the idea is that in that play, they can't leave. These characters can't leave the apartment because, of course, that's the play.
Yeah.
But as a movie, you're going, why is this taking place over one afternoon? Why isn't it more spread out? And reality, in this case, it has to. You know, no one can leave the room effectively. So that is really fascinating. But there's also the other element to it, which is, you know, it kind of veers into the theater of the absurd. It feels a bit like Waiting for Godot at times. It has this Brechtian feel to it, and that's something you definitely don't get very often in movies without it being or feeling too highfalutin or feeling like too much of an overreach. So I actually thought reality, you know, it's small in scope, there's not a lot to it, but it's trying a lot of interesting things that were working for me, and I really respected that.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well that it flashes to the transcript at various moments, almost as if to just kind of say to the audience, no, this this actually did happen. This conversation about the dog and like the cat, or you know, like it's
it's the moments you have to be told, this actually was part of it.
This was part of the procedure, was just to make small talk about or know the location of the cat. You know,
there's actually a little timestamp earlier in the movie where it says like how much time has passed, because obviously you know the transcript doesn't capture the gap. The pauses entire, like it's been sped up a little bit, to fit into an 80-minute film. But there's a point where it says it actually took them 40 minutes to get inside the house.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting as well. Like it was even more drawn out. And
and
it reminds you, no, that's actually part of it.
Yeah.
That's intentional. It takes them 40 minutes because they want it to take 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really fascinating as well.
And even just like when you, the absurdity of some of these things, like when they kind of have the tape, you see the background officers just like getting the like do not cross tape and they're putting it around the house.
Yeah.
Even though it's like not an active, I don't know, like, you
it's
know,
not
just.
A, it's not a technically a crime, or, you know, yeah, it is, I guess, but the way that the FBI agents don't play it as such.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And I kind of wish, I do wish they kept it, Is This a Room?
Yeah.
As a title. And from what I read about the play, you know, that sort of, it's sort of, you know, tossed off in the movie, the moment where someone says, is this a room? But it's a bit more of a, like, like that kind of Waiting for Godot type moment where someone walks into a room and says, is this a room? And then walks out. But it happened. That's what happened. So, yeah, I thought it was really interesting. So I hope people are intrigued by it and go check it out. But you should be, not you should be sleeping, that's an RTR FM show. You heard my feelings is a maybe something that's nice for a warm, cozy Friday night.
Well, yeah, it definitely is, you know, there are a lot of great New York locations and that feeling of just watching these people go about their daily lives, but you know, there are so many good kind of moments and character insights, and it's a really great cast as well. So yeah, no, I was a real fan of You Hurt My Feelings, and yeah, hopefully I can catch up with some of the other films that Nicole Holofcener has done.
I don't think those first two are available in Australia.
Yeah,
that's my memory of it. Like, well, it's not just talking. Like, haven't been able to get a hold of it. I think they're like, maybe they're Criterion releases, if that.
Yeah.
But it's always been very difficult to get them, like Noah Baumbach's early films.
Well, I mean, speaking of, there is a connection right there, because I was a big fan of, I think it's his, yeah, it's
Kicking
his first film, Kicking and Screaming, the lead role, played by Josh Hamilton. And it's interesting.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen it.
Because it's interesting to think about him at that time, like, you know, he was also in With Honors, that film, yes, with Brendan Fraser and Joe Pesci, and, you know, was this kind of like young, up-and-coming actor who could be, you know, in that, you know, list of Gen X leading men, like Ethan Hawke or
yeah,
whatever, but has continued on as a kind of, I guess, a New York-based character actor. And so, you know, it feels like I don't see him that often in things. I'm sure he might be in some TV show, like, making good money, like the Good Wife spinoff or something like that. But
he is not in The Good Fight. I can confirm he is not in The Good Fight.
But it's so great when he shows up in supporting roles like Eighth Grade and like this movie, because he has such a kind of, there's something about his both his face, his persona, but he really provides just great support, great performances to these roles, and very different roles, but there's a there's also a little through line in the just the kind of like almost like the puppy dog kind of the friendly affability that also seems a bit weak and not supported by anything. But yeah, Josh Hamilton, he is the lead in Kicking and Screaming, which I think you can still watch on Netflix in Australia. So yeah, if you've not seen Noah Baumbach's first film, it's a first film, but definitely one that deals with the ennui of coming out of college, coming out of university. A lot of great performances in there from Chris Eichmann from Stillman Films. Yeah, Carlos Jacquet. Eric Stoltz, the guy who used to be in every movie in the 90s and is in fewer now. So, yeah, Kicking and Screaming, that's my pick to click for a Netflix recommendation.
Now,
so,
if you're streaming Kicking and Screaming,
yeah,
and you're halfway through and Will Ferrell is screaming at children playing soccer, you have watched the wrong, yeah, Kicking and Screaming. That's just a public service announcement.
That is just always a I mean, that's a whole episode in itself of the number of films that have been just like, yeah, I mean, it's, they go, look, there's a title, but it's, yeah, why not use it? It's Kicking and Screaming. Why not?
Well, yeah, as a wrapping up note, look forward to the movie Reality Winner,
yeah,
coming next year. So that is another film about Reality Winner.
Ah, okay.
I'll have to quickly look up. I think it's Kate Mara who plays her.
Oh, wow.
But that's more of the life story,
yeah,
of reality rather than just this sort of single moment in time. I can't find it right now, but yes, it is coming. So I always did wonder though, like, you know, will there be Winner, like, after a certain point? Because, like, it's such a name that could be, you could call the movie Reality, you could call it Winner.
Yeah.
Reality Winner actually sounds like the more boring choice of the three.
It's just such an amazing name, because it's almost like perfect. It's like,
yes,
it's a perfect irony to the name. But that's very interesting to hear, because it's definitely, you know, one of the things, I mean, I like the film, maybe not as much as you did, but there were moments where it's like, oh, I wish I could know more about this facet, particularly in terms of how the leak got leaked to the government and the kind of the gray area there, and that the people that she sent it to were probably not as trustworthy or as helpful as they could have been in that whole thing.
That's another interesting story that hopefully will be covered in the film, which is actually called Winner. So a slight correction. So we've got Reality.
Right.
The next one will be called Winner. And it's going to be star Emilia Jones,
okay,
who people may know from Coda. She was a young actress,
great,
from Coda.
Well, there you go. Hopefully it makes it and doesn't vanish the way of Adam McKay and Jennifer Lawrence's Elizabeth Holmes film that once the TV show was made. Look, but yeah, salute. Looking forward to Winner. And thank you so much, Simon. I think this was a winner of an episode. How about that?
Always. Thank you, Tristan.